God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here tonight in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. If you could raise your virtual blue hand, or we have John. Welcome, John. Glad you're here. Anybody else in their first 30 days? I'm looking at the screen. Don't see anybody waving. Kayla, welcome, Kayla. All right. So men and women, if you would like to pass your numbers on, please just chat them to the host, and then we'll get them passed on to John and Kayla. Thank you, guys. Welcome. You're the reason we're here. I have asked Jessica to read the preamble. Jess, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Right. Jessica, Alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you. And let's see, let me get my format back up here. The format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we are very excited to have Polly P. from Jacksonville, Florida, come and I just got a flash up here. Your meeting will end in 10 minutes. That's not cool. Ruh-roh. All right. So there's something technically wrong here. I guess we're going to have to all go out and come back in again when we get cut off. After Polly tells her story, we will allow them, we'll allow her a break, and we'll call for announcements and the seventh tradition, et cetera, and then we'll reconvene and ask questions of the speaker. So please feel free to send questions through the chat questions. So very excited to have Polly tonight. Let me get her unmuted. I don't want to take up any more of her time. It was just delightful talking to you on the phone and getting you lined up here. I'm really glad the schedules, our schedules worked out. And take it away, Polly, it's all yours.
Okay, David, thank you so much. My name's Polly Pistol and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to give you a few of my credentials. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I have a home group, and that's the West Connect group in Jacksonville, Florida. And we meet on Monday night. And if you're ever in Jacksonville, please come see us. We're also doing a Zoom meeting on Monday night. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I sponsor. And I'm a very active member in the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm very glad I spoke to Lynn this morning. So I was already on the phone in Norfolk, Virginia, but now I have Zoomed there, and I'm just grateful to be here. And the big book tells me I should share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened and what I'm trying to be like today. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to hit some really highlights of my life. And I'm really grateful for my life. I'm really grateful for the life I have been given in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have had so many gifts. And one of the things I also, when there's new people in the room, and I just want to welcome you, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of the stuff I'm going to talk about is, just because we're sober doesn't mean life doesn't show up. But what happens is because we're sober, and because we have each other, and because we have a higher power, and because we have meetings, and because we have the things we have, we can face whatever challenges come our way. And I had a sponsee meeting on Thursday. And I'll tell you, when I got on that sponsee meeting, it was a lot going on that day, a lot going on. And I look at where today is and what is going on? I don't know. I got a message. Anyway, and I just think about where I am today from Thursday to Sunday. And one of the things that was happening is my AA sponsor was having cancer surgery. And she came through that with flying colors. And I thought she was on her way home. I told Susanna, I think she's on the way home. I just now listened to my voicemail, and she's going home Tuesday. So she's here in Jacksonville. And because of COVID-19, I can't even see her. And she lives in South Florida. So, but she's doing fine. And those of you, I know that you're in Virginia, who knew Michael and Ted Earle, at that time I had gotten a phone call about Ted. Michael had called me, and that night he passed. And my husband was having cancer surgery, which went just fine. He's fine. And it was just kind of one of those days. But what I think about today is that one of the things I loved that Lynn said, I just got to give a shout out for Ted Earle. And what you said today, Lynn, is that Ted Earle has saved every alcoholic and stray animal in Evans and Augusta. That was Ted Earle. That was the man he was. And he has an amazing legacy that's going to follow him. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just, you know, just a host of people that are going to rally around a beautiful life. I want to start by saying that I am not an alcoholic who had any child abuse or anything like that. I was a very loved person. I loved the little girl. I'm an only child. I had parents who absolutely loved and adored me, but there was something wrong with me from the very beginning. And I had these parents who cared about me, and I always lusted for something else. My mother worked, and I'll be 80 years old in a few months. And when I was a little girl, mothers didn't work. And I was really embarrassed because she worked. I didn't want her to work. And but they worked. My parents worked so they could give me things, dancing lessons, gymnastic lessons. And I was just never grateful. And she would make me beautiful clothes. And I would tell her I didn't want the clothes. I wanted store-bought clothes like everybody else had. There's that thing that the big book talked about. I was just restless, irritable, and discontent. So whatever was inside of me, whatever that is, that makes me mentally and bodily different from my fellows. And it's just like when somebody walks in, and I know you hear this, at least I hear it a lot, they'll walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and they'll say, I just feel so different. And I tell them, you feel that way because you are. We are not like other people. The book tells me that I am mentally and bodily different. So whatever is inside of me that causes me to crave and obsess and all the things I do is spent over alcohol, what makes me not be able to take a drink of alcohol? And they say that 1 out of every 10 people is alcoholic. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't think that's a proven stat. I don't think they can prove it. But if that's true, what makes me that one person? I don't know. We don't know that. All I know is that there's something inside of me that's different. And Bill talks a lot in the big book about a twisted mind. Well, I'm telling you, my mind's been twisted all of my life. It is just, I don't think like other people. There's always been something wrong with me. And I can tell you, when I found alcohol, I was 18 years old and I married an Air Force officer. And we soared off into the sunset to live happily ever after. And I had no idea what I'd signed up for. But I can tell you this, I have imprinted in my mind the first drink of alcohol I ever took. When I swallowed it down, I could still feel it, what it felt like. I mean, what I knew was I was always this uptight person, seemed like I was just always wound up and nervous and all of that. And I found the answer. It soothed me. And that irritation that I had, it just soothed me out. And I can remember that drink of alcohol. And I knew when I took that drink that I wasn't supposed to take that drink. But I at first didn't know it was alcohol, but I guarantee you after I swallowed it, I knew it was alcohol, but I didn't stop. And I didn't get drunk that day, but I got relief. It seemed like the first time in my life I could just breathe. Now, I'm raised in the South. I'm raised in Texas, and I'm raised Southern Baptist. And I tell you, I today belong to a Southern Baptist church. I can't even believe I do because the Baptist church was on every inventory I ever wrote. But God has a huge sense of humor because now I am a member of a Baptist church because of a fabulous, absolutely amazing miracle that happened in my life a couple of years ago. And what happened is that Baptist church was fire and brimstone. And I can tell you the one I go to today is not that. It's not that at all. In fact, the minister of the church I go to today, because our home group has so outgrown itself, just wants us there so bad. He wants us in that church. And what happened is when I was growing up, there wasn't any Baptist minister looking to talk to any alcoholic, I'll guarantee you. And what they were screaming up there is, thou shalt not drink. And they were, you know, you're born a sinner. You're going to burn in hell and all this stuff. And so I didn't drink. But that day at that luncheon, I took a drink of alcohol. And it's amazing how all that went right out the window. That thought, what happened didn't go out the window, is my idea of God. That's what didn't go out the window. And I'd kind of like to talk about my journey to the God of my understanding today. And what happened is I ended up marrying, well, I married this man, and he was a bomber pilot, and he was gone for years at a time. And I was left in charge of my two little boys. I had my two little boys. I mean, just like shortly, about a year and a few months after we were married, I had my first child. And then I had my second child 2 years later. And I had these two little boys. And at first, I was really a good mom. I was a patient mom. I loved these two little boys. But as I progressed in the disease of alcoholism, I became more and more impatient with these kids, these two little boys. And then what would happen is I would take a drink of alcohol. And I was the person in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talked about a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. because now I'm becoming mean and angry, and I'm throwing these little boys into the wall. I'm hitting them. I'm screaming at them. I'm pulling their hair. What I became, what the disease of alcoholism did, is it took me to a place of abusing my children emotionally. I would be this person who was really loving, and I'd take a drink and I'd switch and I'd become somebody else. So they never knew who was going to show up. And by the time my kids, my two boys, were around 8 years old on, my youngest was 14 when I got sober and my oldest was 16, I became literally incapable of taking care of them. I wasn't able to get them up in the morning to go to school. They'd have to get themselves up. I just literally was not able to take care of my sons. And then my husband was about 3 years before I got sober. My husband was 100% disabled from the military. He had congestive heart failure. He spent a year in the hospital at Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C., and then he was medically retired, 100%. And he's the victim of Agent Orange, and he got congestive heart failure at the age of 36. And, I mean, his heart was so enlarged, he could hardly walk or he could hardly breathe. And I can't take care of him because of my alcoholism. And I am absolutely horrified by who and what the person I am. I'm horrified by who I am. What happens is I end up, what brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll just tell you how I got here. I got here by having a car wreck, and that car wreck would bring me to detox for the first time. And I went into this detox center, and they gave me some pills to, you know, kind of to detox. And it was, you know, kind of spacey, really good medicine. You know how that many of you been, what that's like. And when group was over and all that, all these people were sitting around telling war stories. I'm not telling any war stories because they're talking about their divorce. They've been to jail. They've been to prison. They all cuss like a sailor. I mean, I didn't even say the F word when I came to detox the first time. I'm really good at it now, but I didn't say it then. But I looked around and I just knew that I wasn't like these people. Whatever I've got, it's not what they've got. There's something else wrong with me. And then what happened is I had a Jitter House romance in there, and I'm not sharing my war story, because my war story is what I've done to my sons. How I've abused them. I've got a husband who's like 90% bedridden, and I can't take care of him. Where I have a father in Abilene, Texas, who's dying of colon cancer, and I'm his only child, and I can't get to Abilene to see my dad. And this is, I'm not talking about what's going on with me, because mine's not funny, and it's too shameful. And then I have this Jitter House romance, and I run off with this guy for 58 days. So now everything is even worse. Now I've left my kids and the husband, and I end up being 12 steps out of a motel and brought back into that detox center, and I'm beaten up and numerous other things, and I got to go to a place that I'd never heard about. I was so naive when I first came into detox. I mean, I had been a military wife in a very safe environment. I just was totally naive to what was going out there in the world. I was a bad alcoholic, but I was a bad alcoholic at home. That's where I was a bad alcoholic. And what happened was I got back in that detox center and I knew I couldn't live sober. And then I tried to take my life. And God has interfered in my life so many times without my permission. And I had a friend who said something came over her, and she drove around and she found my car parked outside a motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way in. She pushed it open and she found me laying there. And she called 911, and I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. And needless to say, that didn't take. And God interfered in my life because I got put on a 5150 for that little suicide attempt, and which was enough time for my husband to obtain a court order that I was to go to treatment. And I entered that treatment center on April the 11th of 1977. Now, I have no idea. It's a 12-step program. Of course, they have a lot of stuff. Hazleton was, I'm sure they're still really big now, but that was the place, and we had all kind of literature from them. So that's what was going on, you know, over 40 years ago. And what happened was, as I was fed the AA program, I was taken to meetings. I got to meet people at meetings. But I just kept hearing about this God, and there was just something inside of me. I knew God. And I kept thinking, I know God's there. I know God's there, but I'm too much of a sinner. That's the way I saw myself. God is not going to take care of me. Look what I've done. How can anybody be protected from that? And what happened was, is that they started bringing in meetings, and they told us that we had, and I just little by little, I got invited. It was a 28-day treatment program, but I got invited to stay 6 weeks. Some of us are sicker than others. And I stayed in that treatment center for 6 weeks, and they were taking us to meetings, and I became slowly just falling in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just had such a desperation. And that's what I'm so grateful that I still have that desperation. I'm so grateful that it's still there. For me, I call it a gift. It's just the gift of desperation. I just wanted to be better than I was. And I wanted to have a different, I wanted to feel differently about God. I just couldn't yet. And when I graduated from that treatment center, I had asked the man who had 12-stepped me out of that motel to be my sponsor. And he had been a captain in the Navy. He was a Monsignor priest. And he had left the priesthood to marry an Asian woman. And he was sober. He had gotten sober at Long Beach Naval Hospital. And he and his sponsor was a man that I would grow to love and know as much as I loved. And his name was Frank Honeycutt. And this man's name was Frank Fitzpatrick. And Frank had met him at Long Beach Naval Hospital. And what happened was, as Frank told me, you show up at my house when you get out of treatment. And I got out of treatment, and I came to his house, and I said, I'm on the sixth step. I said, I did my fifth step yesterday in treatment. That was a 5-step treatment center. And he looked at me, and he said, no, that's a treatment center psychobabble. You are not on your sixth step. You are on your first step. And he started to bring me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we got to the third step, I just told him, I said, you know, there's no way that God is going to forgive me for what I've done to my sons. There's no way that God's going to forgive me for what I've done to my husband and my father. And I mean, I'm a horrible person. I'm horrible. And Frank looked at me and he said, God forgives everybody. The worst person. God loves the worst person. And he said, Polly, I'm here to tell you that I am a priest, but I did not find God in the Catholic Church. I found God in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what you can do is you can just believe that I believe. You can have my God. You can use my God, the one that I have. And so for a long time, I used Frank's God, because Frank was gentle and he was kind, and his God was gentle and he was kind. And what happened was, is he had the ability to tell me the truth, and I could hear him. And when I gave him my fifth step, I didn't have many things. My fifth step grew after I was sober for a while, because I just seemed to act out terribly after I got sober. I was not a poster child for AA. And what happened was I just had a very few things on my fifth step. I just had my mom, my parents, my husband, the United States Air Force, and the Baptist Church. My two sons I had on farms done. So I didn't feel any resentments to my kids. I just felt shame and just guilt and horror of what I had done to them. And I didn't even know all I had done. And Frank just looked at me with all the love a person could look at me. And he said, "Polly, you are a child abuser. And you are going to go to these boys and you are going to make amends." And that's what I did. And he had me write out the amends on a 3x5 card. And I went to my sons, and he had me write out another card that said, "I am so sorry that happened to you. I'm going to be the very best mother I can be for the rest of my life." And when I got through reading those amends, I did just what he said to do, you know, the book says to do. I asked them if I had left anything out, or did they have anything to say to me. Now, my sons were 14 and 16 when I got sober, and they were angry. They were very angry. And they just started coming at me like, you know, like two Uzis were shooting me. And I just kept reading my little card, "I'm so sorry that happened to you. But I will not take anything for having done what I've done, that experience." Because it was the first building block of me starting to make a relationship with these kids. And that's what I began to do. And what I ended up doing is I met a man in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ended up having a lot of affairs with a lot of men. I was 36 years old, my libido came awake, and I added some more shame to my life. And now I've got a lot of people to make amends to. But I met this man named Dave Pistol, and I didn't have an affair with Dave. And I met Dave when I was 6 months sober, and we became friends, and we became best friends. And he became somebody that I could confide in and talk to. And he sponsored a lot of the men that I'd had affairs with, so he knew more about me than he needed to. And we started building a relationship. And when I was 3.5 years sober, and he was 4.5 years sober, he looked at me and he said, "Polly, I'm in love with you. But I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." And, you know, God willing, and our lives go on until October the 27th, Dave and I will celebrate 40 years of marriage. And I'm married to the man of my dreams. I'm still married to the man of my dreams. We got married and we started this life of going into and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard this beautiful woman talk when I was in Austin, Texas. And I said, if I ever am anywhere where she is, I want her for my sponsor. And Dave got transferred to Southern California. And I went and looked up this woman, Dottie Harris. And Dottie was the most amazing woman. And of course, she knew Frank, who was my sponsor. And her and Frank Honeycutt was Dave's sponsor. And we just started this journey. And she was the most godly person that, I mean, she knew about God. She talked about God. And then this beautiful man, Frank Honeycutt, was the example of what I believe. And I mean, he helped people. He went to 3 meetings a day. He was always had somebody in tow. He was just the most amazing man. And he showed me God. Frank showed me God. And Dottie showed me God, but she also knew about God. And I started to get a God of my own understanding. I started to believe that God really loves me. And the more I worked in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the more 12-step I did, and the more I helped other people, the more I began to feel this power growing in me. And I would read things, and I learned, I would read books, and I still read a non-AA approved literature that I've read since I first got sober. And that's Around the Year with Emmett Fox. And I love Emmett Fox. And Emmett Fox was a huge contributor to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he is about surrender and to love everybody. And you cannot be sideways with anybody. And I started to make sure that my relationships were in order. And I had the privilege of being able to hear and sit in his home with Chuck Chamberlain, sit on the floor because I was such a newcomer, and could hear Chuck Chamberlain saying things like, we have one problem, and that problem is conscious separation from God and man. And we have one solution, and that's conscious contact with God and man. So I have to have a good relationship with you. And I can't have a good relationship with God if I don't have good relationships with his kids. And I knew that it was important that I make sure that no matter what, I work these steps and I get this inventory and I have good relationships with them. And my youngest son got sober when I was 6.5 years sober, and we've walked this journey together. He's 36 years sober. And then I'm going to tell you a big miracle. 1.5 years ago, my oldest son, who turned 60 on May the 9th, has 1.5 years sober. He came when he was 59 years old. So if you're waiting for somebody to come in here because you see that, and I didn't even know for sure he had alcoholism. I just knew that there was a wedge between him and I. And I didn't know it was alcoholism. But you know what? I kept doing what this program kept telling me to do for over 40 years. I kept doing what this program said do. And lo and behold, that wedge between he and I is gone. And that wedge was alcoholism. And I had a resentment not long ago that I had to work through so hard. I don't know if I'd ever been that hurt in my whole life, but what happened with me. But I knew that there was no way that I could live if I was angry with one of God's kids. And I had to find a way to forgive. What we just talked about, I had to find a way to forgive. We didn't talk about it here. I just did it on any links. But I have to find a way to forgive. And if I can't forgive, I'm going to be miserable. I cannot have ill feelings about one of God's kids. And what happened was I just kept doing the work and kept doing the work. And I feel like I've got all kinds of spiritual experiences. I've had so many. And what happened was, and this has just been a few months ago, I was sitting, I had read my readings, and I knew that everything I've read, everything Chuck said, everything Sandy said, I knew that I had to forgive. Sandy forgave the man that murdered his daughter before he even landed to where she had been murdered. That's who Sandy was. And I knew I had to do exactly what he did. And what happened was I was just sitting doing my reading and just being quiet, and I just had this whole thing just come over me. And all of a sudden I thought, look at all my children have forgiven me. And I did 1,000 times worse to them than this person did to me. How can I not forgive them? And what happened is I was able to be free with that. And I know that I know that God is good. It's like, I don't know what's going to come out. I already know of something that's good that come out of coronavirus and COVID-19, and that's Zoom, because my husband is very ill, and I can't do the things that I used to do in Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm his caregiver. and I can't travel around, so I couldn't come to Norfolk, Virginia. But I just Zoomed there today, and I get to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't get to do. But I know today that no matter what, and I believe that it has been, that God lets us do do-overs. I have five grandchildren, and I've been a good grandmother, and I've been a fun grandmother to my grandchildren. And I couldn't take care of my first husband. How does a selfish, self-centered person take care of somebody else? But because of the God of my understanding, and because I know I'm exactly in the right place, and I believe what Paul wrote long ago, nothing happens in God's world by mistake. And I know that if it's good, it's of God. And if it's not good, it's not of God. And I'm saying that tonight because that was one of Michael's things that she always said, that God is good no matter what. And I believe I've been given the gift of being able to take care of my husband today when I couldn't do it before. I get to do a do-over. And not only do I, and it's not that I have to take care of him, I get to. I get to take care of the man of my dreams, and he's still here. And I'm telling you, he walked up to the ledge many times in the past 5 years, but he's still here, and we're still sharing this program together, and we're Zooming all over the world. And I thank you so much, David, for allowing me to come to Norfolk and share with your group. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Polly. I'm going to allow everyone to unmute and applaud and say thank you.
Thank you, Polly.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Polly.
Thank you.
Polly,
bless you, Polly. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks, Polly.
Thank you. Polly.
Thanks, Polly.
Right, let me get my format back up here. Okay, so everybody, just please send your questions to, I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody again. And if you could think of some questions that you'd like to ask Polly, please chat them to the user questions. I also got a... I also got a text from somebody saying, why is someone recording anonymity? I tried to text them back, but apparently they came in and left. If I didn't make it clear in the beginning of the meeting, we are recording this session, and but we are going to publish only the audio portion of this meeting. So hope that helps. I'm going to put a link out into the chat for the seventh tradition. Simple actions, the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Hope you guys are sending in your questions. I just got a text from questions. Nobody's sending in questions. Unless you guys want to listen to everything that I want to know about. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I would be happy to take a few announcements. If you want to raise your hand, I'll unmute you. Okay, that offer's still good, but I don't see any. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. All right. So we are going to resume. I see some questions starting to stream in. Wonderful. I'm going to go ahead and unmute Polly. Like a well-oiled machine in here tonight, isn't it? There we go. Okay, Polly's unmuted. Thank you so much, Polly. That was wonderful. Ready for some questions? Can I hear you? So a member asks, Polly, how did you walk off the amends with your kids in your first few years? What were the actions you were taking in the first few years to make those initial amends with your children?
Well, I just tried to do all the things that I believe that a good mom would do. I had my oldest son was 16, so they had a few years left in school. So I made sure that I showed up for everything. Shortly after I got sober, my youngest son started using and drinking. And that became really evident, and I did everything wrong. I kept trying to get him sober because I was newly sober. And I guarantee you he didn't want any part of it. But I just tried the best I could to just prepare meals. I went to a lot of meetings, but I just tried to be a mom. And I don't know that I did anything. I just tried to follow direction, to just do the things that I thought a good mom would do. My oldest son, my youngest son was an athlete. Now, shortly after I got sober, he stopped being an athlete because he found something that gave him a lot more, you know, joy than being a hockey player. He was a hockey player. But my oldest son was a musician, and I was able to be present for him a lot on that journey. And I was able to help. I was able to take care of my husband and help the kids. I just was able to show up, which is what I couldn't do all those years. I couldn't show up. So I started to be able to show up. And for that, I'm grateful.
Thank you. A member asks, would you be willing to share some of your 11-step practices today?
Oh, I'd love to share my 11-step practices. In fact, I do. I share with a lot of the women. Well, I'm an early riser, and so I get up in the morning and I do some readings, and sometime I get a phone call early and they'll say, have you done your readings yet? And I read a couple of non-AA approved literature that I read that's really precious to me. I always say the third step prayer, and I put people in it. God, I offer to you, and right now I'm offering Michael, and I offered her family, and my sponsor's husband, the people. God, I offer to you to build with them and to do with them as you will. And I usually have a little prayer list, and I sit for about 10 minutes. I'm not a great meditator, and sometimes it's longer, but I usually manage about that much, and then I start taking phone calls. But the first thing I do when I wake up is that when I open my eyes and I see I'm still here, I thank God for that. I thank God I'm still here. And I thank God for my good health. I'm in very good health. And if I wasn't in good health, I couldn't take care of Dave. And so I just am so grateful that I am in good health. And then I get up and grab a cup of coffee and grab my books. And now I'm sitting outside on my porch. And I get to hear the birds sing. And a lot of time I'll talk to people early in the morning and they can hear the birds singing. So they can hear the birds. So that's my 11-step practice. And all day long, I try my best to be mindful of 10, to be mindful of, to pause. And if I've offended somebody, I try to do it right away. And then I go to my nightly review. And if I've left anything out, I try to correct it. If I've left something out of 10. And then in the morning, I get up and do my, upon awakening, I do my upon awakening.
I don't know if I misheard you, but it sounded like if you got a call and maybe you were in the middle of your readings that the person who called would maybe join in with you.
Well, and sometimes I'll just, you know, they'll say, have you already done your readings? And I'll say, yes. And sometimes we'll read them again and they'll have something and we'll kind of talk about it. So I just loved it. Suzanne, she's on this call and she said the other day that she says, Polly gets up at the same time I do. And I always know what she's doing because I'm doing the same thing. And then we'll talk about it sometimes. And it's really, it's a great way to start the morning is to kind of talk about, you know, what you read, what's ahead, what to look at the day ahead. Cause we're gonna just plan that day ahead. And we're gonna, upon awakening, we're gonna look at the day ahead. And it's beautiful to be able to do that. What a great way to start the day.
Thank you. A member asks, have you ever felt, this sort of a combination of two questions. Have you ever felt disconnected from God in sobriety? And how did you get back connected? Have you ever found yourself off the beam? If so, how did you get back on?
Okay, I just told you I am a big, I read a lot of Emmett Fox. And one of the things that he talks about, and I know it's true for me, is that we all go through spiritual dry spells. And what he says do is just keep doing what you always do. This is a program of action. And what I need to do is, maybe I'm reading every morning and I don't even hardly know what I'm reading, because I'm so spiritually dry. The only thing I know is if I just keep doing it. And see, it's happened to me enough times over the years that I know if I just keep taking the action, that it will return. And that is what I do. I continue to take. Have I been terrified? Have I been scared? Have I been screaming for God's help and don't believe sometimes that he's listening? Yes. Yes. And one of the things I know is that God knows every hair on my head. So he knows that I'm afraid. And I know that he's just, you know, just so sad that I'm so afraid, because he's trying. I think he's doing waving his hands. I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. It's okay. I'm here. And when I'm spiritually fit, I can feel that. But believe me, I'm not always spiritually fit. I can be angry, I can be resentful, I can be a lot of things I don't like to be. And I'm really grateful when I can come through those challenges.
Great. All right, we've got another question. What has been your biggest growing pain?
Okay, I've had a few have been growing pains. I believe that everything today that this is a spiritual classroom that we're in. That's what we're in. It's a spiritual classroom. And everything that happens to me that looks like it's bad is so that I can grow spiritually. Now, a lot of those lessons started a while ago. My husband, in 1993, I had the biggest blessing of my sobriety. My first grandchild was born. He's going to be 27 years old in a few days. And he was born in 1993. And what happened was that it was like the happiest day of my life. But in 1993, the bottom fell out of aerospace in Southern California. My husband lost his job. We ended up losing our house. It was repossessed. We ended up filing bankruptcy. And I mean, it was hugely embarrassing and humiliating. And how does that happen to people that are sober? What step are you working? And, you know, and all that stuff. But what happened was Frank Honeycutt told me, it's none of my business what people think of me, but my very life depends on what I think of them. And I had to get busy. And my sponsor had been, she had been through so much adversity. And she says, tell the truth from the heart. When you're behind that podium or you're working with another woman, tell the truth. I don't care how embarrassing it is, because that truth is gonna, that is not helping it happening to you unless it needed to happen. And one of the things I know, and my husband has been through huge health challenges, and he's trying to see that God, he sees that God is working in his life no matter what. And sometimes those challenges are hard to see when we're, and we think God's not there, but he is. But the things that have been the hardest were those things that happened when my grandson was born. He was born deaf. We did not know that for 2 years. And now he is an amazing man. He is a civil engineer doing absolute, graduated from college with an engineer degree. And I mean, he is an amazing person, and he's deaf. So, and then we have had these challenges for the last 5 years, Dave. And I promise you, this past five years is the hardest walk I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you. Let's see, we have, could you offer some recommendations to deal with shame and forgiving oneself?
I certainly can. Continue to build the relationship with God. I have to tell myself, I have to convince myself, I have to act like it, that I am God's kid. I am God's kid. And God loves me. No matter what I've done, if God can forgive the worst murderer, then he can forgive me. And what I try to do, it's just have a visualization. You don't have to be Christian or anything, but I just try to have a visual of Christ on the cross saying, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I can put myself down, and I'll start putting myself down, and maybe a sponsee or a sponsor will say to me, gosh, that's not the way you ought to treat God's kid. And I'm God's kid. I need to take care of myself. I need to act. I need to feed myself. I need to feed myself spiritually. I need to feed my body with food. I need to take care of this. It's my temple. I love what KDP says. This is a temple. And God lives there. And I want God to have a nice place to live. And I try to keep it cleaned up of resentment. It's just like I told you, I had this resentment that went on almost 2 years or over 2 years. And it was eating me alive. And, you know, I could get people to get in there with me and say, you were justified. I can't be justified. No matter what, I can't be justified. I can't do it. I have to see that person as God's kid. And I have to know, no matter what, they're God's child, just like I'm God's child. And I self-talk. I don't know if anybody else does. I talk to myself. There you have it.
Thank you. Okay, Polly, is it possible to have too many sponsees?
Well, I've had people tell me I have too many. And I feel like that you're going to have as many as you're supposed to have. I don't think there's a certain number. One of the things that I've got one sponsee that is 2 years old, but the rest of my sponsees have a lot of sobriety. And so what happens is I'm not taking that many people through the steps. So I'm sponsoring. I have become the sponsor that when everybody else's sponsor dies, this is how I'm getting a lot of the women I sponsor. Now their sponsors die, so they come to me. But my sponsees have time. So what happens is it's like we talk about things, but so it's not that hard. I have a lot of sponsees, but you know what? I think God gives you whatever you've got, you get enough time for. So I don't know how to answer that question. Okay. I one time heard Clancy say, and I think I've had two things that I've heard said. Somebody says, how many people do you sponsor? And Tom Ivester said, about half.
Right.
And then I heard Clancy one time say, how many people do you sponsor? And he said, I'm one short. So what happens is I don't think there's a fast rule. If people usually get as many as they can.
All right. So a member asks, how long does it take for the deep-seated defects to go away?
Oh, I don't know. I'm 43 years sober. I'm sure trying to still shovel them out. So I don't know. They get better. I will say they're better. But I've done this workshop, Emotional Sobriety, and I've been doing it since 1990. And I've done it several times lately on Zoom. And I hadn't done it for years. I hadn't done that workshop for years. And I got asked to do it. And there was all my character defects on there that I put on there in 1990. And I was doing these defects. And I said, oh, for God's sakes, these guys are still there. And so, but they're not what they used to be. And it doesn't last as long as it used to last.
Right. All right. We've got a member asking, how do you forgive the absolutely unforgivable? How are you supposed to forgive strangers for brutally inflicting pain on you? How can you feel normal again? ?
I had my grand sponsor was an amazing woman, Alcoholics Anonymous, and she used to say something, if you can't love the unlovable, it's not love at all. And if you can't forgive the unforgivable, it's not forgiveness at all. And I tell you, I had a very, very hard time. Now, I feel like what I did to my sons was unforgivable. It was unforgivable. Yet I have been forgiven. And when we have been hurt deeply, and I was hurt deeply, I had something taken from me I loved so passionately, and I put my whole heart and soul in it. And what happened was that I lost that, and I was just devastated. But what happened was that I just can't not forgive. And what happens is I know that person, whoever did that, is so sick. They're sick. That it's like what they say in the big book. And I'm telling you, I've heard some horrible stories about things that people have survived. Terrible stories. And yet, I know that the only freedom is not to get even, is not to have restitution. The only way to feel okay is to forgive. That's the only way. I mean, they may be punished, they may go to jail, these horrible things may happen, all kinds. Justice may have taken place, but unless it's forgiven, it's still there. And that I am convinced of.
Thank you. How do you get from resistance to acceptance of life's terms that scare and or hurt?
Well, I certainly think that's a process, and that's a process that I have definitely been through, and my husband's been through. My husband is very disabled right now and has a lot of challenges. And this was a man who was a rock climber and a backpacker and a kayaker, and he was a total outdoors guy. And this was the way he lived most of our marriage. And then he got sick and couldn't do any of that. And we both had to accept that our lives changed. And the last 5 years have been hospitals and surgeries and, you know, one thing after another. And I think it's a process. And I'm here to tell you right now, I was angry. My life changed. I don't have the same life I had 5 years ago. My life has changed. His life has changed. And we all have to go through that process. And I think it's a grieving process. First, I'm angry. And then, you know, then I feel a lot of self-pity. And, you know, the whole process to where I finally accept. And it's not easy. But life's in session. And these things are going to happen. And the biggest thing I can do is try to see where the lesson is. That no matter what, God loves me. And that what happens is whatever happens to me and whatever's going on in my life right now, whether I like it or not, is the way I am supposed to serve God in this condition. And that's hard to accept, but I think it's a process. It takes a lot of inventory. It takes a lot of meetings. It takes a lot of service. Go work. You know, it's one of those things. You just keep doing what you're doing. And then one of those days you'll see, I was sad because I had no shoes till I saw a man who had no feet. And you'll find that person.
Thank you. So what is your take on effective sponsorship during COVID?
Well, I have a phone absolutely implanted. And I talk on the phone a lot. I talk a lot on the phone. I've been doing a lot of Zooms. I got some girls on this Zoom right now. And it's wonderful to see them. I get to see their faces. In fact, I love Zoom because normally I don't get to see their faces. I get to talk to them, but I don't see their faces. And it's been fabulous. But I do most of my communication with the women I sponsor through the telephone, because I'm not sponsoring in a meeting, I'm in a meeting. And that's where that's where we do our fellowship. But I do my sponsorship on the phone and through writing and inventories are read on the phone, and we talk about situations, we get in the book, we just do the deal. But mostly I sponsor via the phone.
All right, thank you. Let's see, we have a member that says, I had long-term sobriety but went out. I've done several fourth steps. I was told to do another. I have been racking my brain for 3 months on resentments and I came up with none. Can I move on with the steps if I don't have any resentments? ? I feel stuck after a year sober. Any suggestions?
I don't know. I hope she's not stopping. If she doesn't have any resentments, move on. But I just hope and pray if it's someone who's relapsing a lot, I hope and pray you've done a first step, because that's the one that's the most important. If there's a relapse anywhere that's been in your past or your future, it's because somewhere along the line, the powerlessness, that surrender did not happen.
Okay. What is your take on opposite sex sponsorship?
Well, I can tell you right now, I sponsor a man and I was sponsored by a man. And I don't have any problems with it. I don't sponsor but one man and a man. My first sponsor was a man. And all I know is that's just the way that it worked out. And I don't have any judgment on that. I know a lot of amazing people in this program that I have the most respect for, that sponsors men, women, whatever. I just don't have any judgment. Personally, I'm very much kind of a girl's girl. So mostly I have women that I sponsor one man, but I sponsor women. Everybody but that one person is a woman. So let me just say I don't have any judgment on that.
Okay. And a member asks, has your sponsor ever told you to check your motives? How do you do that?
Oh, yes, my sponsor has told me to check my motives. And I can tell you about this resentment that I just had. You know what? I talked about that. Sometimes I talked about it. I'm sure people were sick of hearing about it. My motive was, I want you to agree with me. I want to convince you. And yeah, what are my motives? That is one of the motives. Why am I doing something? What is your motive? Why are you doing that? What is your motive? What is your motive? And a lot of times I'll do things because mostly my biggest motive is I want you to like me. I do things so you'll like me. But I'm trying today to be the things that I try to learn the most is I am also a member of Al-Anon, whether anybody wants me to say that in AA or not, but I am. And I have a really big, this thing is, say what you mean what you say, but don't say it mean. And what I try to do is practice that. But I try to mean what I say, and I try to not have some underlying agenda. But a lot of times I do. But I'm grateful that if it's not my sponsor pointing it out, I have really strong women that surround me. The women I work with are so strong, and not one of them has one bit of problem telling me if I'm off track. And that's the way I like it. I'm a shoulder-to-shoulder kind of gal.
Wonderful. All right, I have one more question. And that is, you described some of your relationships. Did you receive backlash from AA members because of your relationship choices in sobriety? How do you deal with it, if so?
Oh, yeah, I had backlash. I was married. And, it's wrong. I had backlash. The only thing that people would do is just look at me and say, oh, my God, a newcomer. Because of course I had a backlash, rightfully so. If I hadn't, people would not have been honest with me. I had a backlash. You may keep on doing what you're doing. If I'm working with somebody, you may keep on doing what you're doing. But I will tell you if I feel like that what you're doing is going to hurt you. And believe me, it hurt me. It brought me enormous embarrassment and shame.
All right. Well, Polly, you've been so generous with your time. We've gone through all the questions. Is there anything that maybe you didn't cover or you'd like to leave us with tonight?
Well, I don't know. What time is this meeting end?
Well, we booked it until 8:30.
Oh my gosh, I thought I was just supposed to give a 30-minute talk. Well, I gave a 30-minute talk. One of the things I'd like to say is when I first got this, I had it written down as a 30-minute talk. And then you said when we started, share your experience, strength, and hope. And what I was going to talk about was the 12th step, because I really love the 12th step. And in order to do the 12th step, I have to have had a spiritual awakening. So that means I need to do all 12 steps. But I also wanted to say, you don't have to have a spiritual awakening to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got sober, my first sponsor says, you have a car. So you're driving people to AA. You go pick them up. So I, and then back when I got sober, and some of you, I see some people that have some gray hair, that they, we had coffee cups, and we washed coffee cups, and we smoked, and we had ashtrays. And so we did, we were of service. And what happened is we had a lot of Eaton meetings. Texas has a lot of Eaton meetings. And that meant if you were new, you were to clean up and all of them, the chair setter upper. And so, and that was, I was told, 12-step work. And you don't have to have worked all the steps to start the 12 steps. The other thing somebody asked me a lot that question wasn't answered, which is always the 12th step, is how, when can you start sponsoring someone? And my answer is, stay a step ahead. It doesn't matter. What if we had rules to when you can sponsor? When Bill and Bob came in and we were forming Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't have any time. They just helped each other. And they just helped each other stay sober. And that's what it does. And having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So I'm going to have, as a result of the steps, I'm going to have a spiritual awakening. And I'm going to carry these, and I'm going to practice these principles. So what I'm trying to do, and the reason I'm trying to be forthcoming and truthful about when I have experiences like having resentments and stuff, is that no matter what, I practice these principles in all my affairs. I want to be a principled woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to practice these principles. And one of the things I know is that woman that abused her children and did all those horrible things is still here. She's still here. And I don't ever want her to show up again. I don't ever want her to show up again. And I'm going to do everything I can in this program. And the book says, having had a spiritual, that I have to practice these principles in all my affairs. That means I've got to do something. I've got to maintain this program. I've got to practice. So I have to work this program to the very best of my ability all the time. Even when I don't feel like it, even when I'm tired, even when I don't want to, I still have to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because somebody did it for me. And they were there when they were tired. So that's the way I feel about it. I want to stay sober.
Thank you. You talked about Chuck Chamberlain and Dr. Paul. And Dr. Paul used to talk a lot about enthusiasm. And one of the members was asking, clearly you are in Theos, in the spirit. You have enthusiasm. How do you keep up that enthusiasm, Polly?
I love sober. I love being sober. I love AA. I love being sober. I love it. I can tell you it just, you know, I can walk to my home groups tomorrow night, and I can walk into Monday night West Connect meeting in Jacksonville, Florida, and I tell you, as soon as I hit that room, I got a kick in my step and a smile on my face. All of those people. I love people. And I love conferences. Go to conferences. Listen, hear the message. Listen to a lot of speakers. Go to big book studies. I'm always doing something. I'm always going somewhere, or I'm always doing something. Even when Dave's been sick, and I can tell you, I probably love Zoom more than anybody. I love Zoom. It has absolutely given me a new way to see everybody. I have had the opportunity, just because I drank too much whiskey, I've had the opportunity to travel the world. And I've been to a lot of countries to chair in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've got to see a lot of people that I thought I would never see again on Zoom. And I tell you, I just get off of them, and I mean, I'm just lit up. this program just lights me up. And I love talking about it. I love talking about being sober.
All right. Well, since we don't have any other questions, and you feel free to take whatever time you like, but otherwise I'll take the meeting back.
All done. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much, Polly. That was amazing. I'm going to unmute everybody and or allow you to unmute yourself if you want to thank Polly.
Amazing, Polly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Polly.
Thanks, Polly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Polly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Polly.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Polly.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Polly. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Polly.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
All right, I just shared something. I don't know what I'm sharing.
Seventh tradition.
Oh, did I not do the seventh tradition yet?
I saw that was on your screen, what you shared.
Oh, thank you.
See you, Miss Polly.
Thank you. Love you.
Talk to you soon. Love you too.
God bless.
God bless. Love you, Lynn.
Love you too, Polly. I did not know that that Dave was still sick. I thought he was cancer free a while back, and I just didn't know. I just feel like such.
He's got Parkinson's disease, and that's a progressive illness.
Oh, okay, all right. Because I thought he was cancer. He is cancer free right now, though, isn't he?
No.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. We're good. We're good.
I feel like such an idiot for talking to you this morning and taking up your time.
Love you, Polly. Good to see
you. Love you, Isha. Isha's another one who's a caregiver. She's a caregiver for her husband.
Well, you're such a great example of how to express the love to, you know, the love of our life, you know, and just it's a privilege and an honor, and I treasure every day. I know you do too. Even though it's not always easy, but yeah, you're such a great example.
Yeah,
really.
Yes.
Grateful for great leadership and just great demonstration of walking the walk and just being you.
And
other women that kept the doors open for me. So thank you all.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to take the meeting back just one more time. Could I have a volunteer to read the last three paragraphs on page 164? Ebony, please, you can unmute yourself.
All right. Hey, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hi, Ebony.
Hi, Ebony.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Ebony.
Thank you, Ebony. And that is a wrap. So people can unmute themselves as they see fit. Let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Whoop, whoop.